I don't mean to insult you, but the order provides adequate clothing. Leave your soiled things near the door each morning, and they'll be cleaned. Pox nodded. You look to be in fair condition, but you'll be sore and stiff with the schedule you've got. Hot baths are available each night. Many students prefer to bathe and change before supper, if they have time. He looked around at the rest of the students and shook his head. Nearly time to quit, and they know it. As you've come in from traveling and are wearing mail, I won't send you, but we end with a run most days. He turned to the others and raised his voice. Rufin? A young man with dark brown hair stepped back from his partner and came forward. This is Poxenarian. She's a new member. Take her back to the house and show her where things are. She's got a horse for tomorrow, but doesn't know where it's stabled. Rufin bowed, giving Pox a quick glance. She thought he was several years younger than she, half a hand shorter and more slender. As he led her away, back through the empty armory, he looked at her again. "You're not a guardsman?" he asked. Pox could not place his accent, which seemed slightly melodic. "No," she said. She was not going to explain everything all over again, not then. "You fence well," he said, with another sidelong glance. "I've never seen Sierra move so fast, except against the knights. What kind of horse have you?" Pox answered stiffly, suspecting a joke. "Just a black horse, war horse." They were in the stable courtyard by then, and he asked one of the workers.
"That black with the stockings and a wide blaze, he's in the new court stables."
"That's where guest horses are housed," explained Rufin. "I expect they'll move him in here if they've got a free stall." He led the way through a tack room full of racked saddles into another larger stable complex. Before he could find someone to ask, Pox heard socks and saw his wide head peering out over a half door. Rufin looked startled when she pointed him out.
"That's yours. If he's not Parganese bread, I'll take up the harp. Look at the bone of him."
By this time, they were at the stall, and Socks had shoved his nose hard into Pox's tunic. "I don't have any," she said sharply. He seemed in good shape, and had obviously been groomed carefully. No saddle marks showed on him. Rufin hung over the door, still talking.
"Great gods, what a shoulder. How's he trained? Did you train him? Do you have a pedigree? No speed, I'd say, but a lot of bottom."
Pox had no chance to answer. The questions came too fast, and Rufin wasn't paying attention to her anyway. A groom came up.
"This horse yours?"
"Yes."
"You don't like his hind legs messed with, do he?"
"No, did he kick?"
"Kick? Look there at that board."
The man pointed. It had split along its length. "He was hurt before I got him," said Pox. The groom eyed her sourly.
"That's what they all say," he said. "Hurt before I got him, pa. Could have trained him out of it, couldn't you?"
"I did," said Pox, suddenly angry again. "Look." She jumped up on the stall door. Socks threw his head up and snorted.
"Be still,"
she said firmly, and slipped onto his broad back, then down to stand beside him. She ran her hand over his massive rump, down the hind leg and chirped. He lifted his hoof obediently into her hand, and she tapped the sole, then put it down.
"There. You see?"
The groom nodded.
"All right. Now tell that beast to let someone else do it. Come on in."
The groom opened the stall door. Sox stiffened his ears and clamped his tail. Pox soothed him with a hand, and the man followed her gesture and picked up the other hind hoof.
"I suppose, come to think of it, that no one's handled his legs but me since I got him," she said.
"I hope he'll remember this," said the groom.
"Try apples," said Pox.
"Bribe a horse?
That's what I did."
"It works," put in Rufin.
"They're such greedy guts, horses are. We use apples in our training."
"Yes, my lord," said the groom with a slight bow.
Rufin colored, glancing at Pox. When the man had left, and they were walking back across the stable court, he sighed.
"I suppose you know we use only one name here?"
"No." Pox hadn't thought about it.
"Well, the servants and all, they know our full names, but don't worry about it. Just call me Rufin."
"And I'm Pox," she said. He nodded and led her back into the maze of buildings.
"It's simple, really,"
he said a few minutes later, after taking her to the low hall where they would eat
and then to the bathhouse and past some of the classrooms. The High Lord's Hall opens into the forecourt, and directly across from it is the Marshal General's Hall. Her quarters are upstairs, but they hold large meetings downstairs. And several other marshals live there as well. Where you came in, that archway, that's all quarters for the gate guards and some of the servants. The other side of the forecourt is the training college, where we live and meet for classes. It used to be quarters for the Knights of Gerd, but when the order grew too big for it, they converted it for us. The ground floor is much larger. Rooms on the backside look over the roofs. That's because it doesn't have cellars. All the storerooms are above ground.
Why?
Rufin shrugged.
I don't know. I never wondered. They just told us when we came.
Anyway, the low hall is more or less behind the Marshal General's quarters. You saw where the kitchens were, between the steward's office and the hall. The stables are really confusing, and I hear they're thinking of redoing them. Most of our horses, those assigned to training, are stabled in that little court just back of us. But the only way from there to the guest stables is through the tack room, so you'll have to ride out the back of the guest stables and around the smithy. Then the knight's horses are stabled on the other side, south of the training armory.
Pox was still confused, but hated to admit it.
There are other armories, then?
Gerd's teeth, yes. Each order of knights has its own, of course, and the paladins have theirs. And by the way, don't even think of trying to see what magical things they've got. Ellis of Harway tried that a year ago and was knocked senseless for 2 days by the guard power they've set.
Oh, and the Marshal General chewed her out when she came to and had her assigned to be Sulia's servant for a week.
When Pox looked blank at that, he explained,
Sulia's a paladin. She stays here now.
Pox said nothing, since he seemed uneasy. Finally he went on.
Sometimes they say even a paladin is defeated. You think of them dying, but sometimes—
He shook his head.
Of course, I've never seen her. Ellis said it was— Well, she said she'd fight any of us if we tried violating paladin secrecy. You don't know Ellis, of course.
Pox began to think she'd like to know Ellis. She was about to ask which of the students was Ellis when Rufin went on.
You won't, anyway, unless she comes back before you leave.
Was she dismissed? Ellis?
No, but her father died, and she was the oldest. She had to take his place. As soon as one of the others is old enough, she wants to come back, and she will. In the long run, if Ellis wants it, she gets it.
They were now in the passage outside Pox's room. A neatly lettered card, fitted into a slot she had not noticed before, so that anyone would know it was her room.
I'm down 4 doors across the passage, said Rufin.
Pox finally found words for something that had puzzled her.
How did you know about Ellis? I thought the Master General said the new class had been here only a few weeks.
Oh, them, Rufin laughed.
There are, a dozen of them. They're all younger than you. I've been here a year and some.
Were all those in practice with you? Pox did not want to reveal how unskilled they had seemed to her.
No. We train in groups according to skill. That's the most basic group, in sword work. My father, you see, planned for me to be a scholar. I had a badly broken arm as a boy, and he thought it would never hold up to fighting. I thought differently.
Oh. Pox found his composure as interesting as his story. He did not sound angry or defensive. He might have been talking about the training of a horse.
You won't do your sword work with us, I'm sure. But then Aris and Selly won't do staves with you. By Gerd, I've never seen anything so clumsy as your grip on a staff.
Pox flushed, but he obviously meant no insult.
It gives me hope for my sword work, for I was just as clumsy to start. Perhaps you were so with a sword, and yet you've learned great skill.
Well, I'll work hard, said Pox, trying to copy his calm.
Oh, you'll learn. Sierra could teach a cow grace if he wanted to, and he likes you somewhat. Not that that will take the sting out of his blows, but if we want baths before supper, we'd best get going. The rest of them will be crowding in soon enough.
He went in his own room, and Pox turned to hers. Already 2 complete sets of grey tunics and trousers were folded neatly on her bed. She took off her mail and her sweaty clothes, and put on the loose bath gown of heavy grey wool. A knock on her door. Rufin called from outside.
I forgot to tell you, lots of us don't wear the uniform to supper. It's up to you, but don't wear mail or weapons but the dagger. Thanks, she called back. She rummaged among her things, and decided finally to wear her second-best shirt from Brewer's Bridge. Perhaps they would think it strange if she showed up in student's gray at once. Then she thought of the training master and wondered. It seemed that she could be wrong either way. Why hadn't they told her exactly what to do? She was willing to do what she was told. She looked from one stack of clothes to the other, biting her lip nervously, trying to remember exactly what the training master had said. At last, she took up her own shirt and trousers and headed for the bathhouse. Bathed and dressed once more, Pox returned to her own room, wondering now how she would know when it was time to eat. No one had mentioned a gong or other signal. Rufin's door was shut. She was too shy to knock. She heard voices in the passage, but could not distinguish the words. Suddenly a commotion began, shouts, thuds. Pox leaped for her sword, then stopped short. No weapons. She snatched at her door and looked out. A black-haired boy in red velvet lay flat on the floor, blinking up at two who had their backs to Pox. She saw Rufin's door open and his narrow, good-humored face peering out. "And if you come up here again, Oris," said one of those standing.
"What are you doing now, Con?" asked Rufin.
"Don't bother yourself, Rufin, just reminding the juniors that they've no right to come up here."
"I do,"
began the boy in red, but the second of the standing pair laughed shortly.
"You do, eh? Then we've a right to dump you on your tail."
He took a step forward, but Rufin came out of his room.
"No one has a right to brawl, Jory, and you and Con know it. I don't know where you got the idea that this is your passage."
"You dispute that?" asked Con scornfully. "You? By Gerd's toe, Rufin, I can throw you with one arm alone."
"I doubt that," said Rufin.
The boy had started to roll to his feet, but Con aimed a kick in his direction. "Stay there, little boy." Pox had been growing angrier. Jory sneered at Rufin and said,
"We have to do something. The master's put one of them on our floor."
Rufin cocked his head.
"So?
So? We'll have to teach them all a lesson. I don't suppose a peasant girl can be much trouble."
Pox felt her anger like a leaping flame.
"You don't?"
she asked, trying for a pleasant tone. The two whirled. She saw the shock in their faces as they saw her size and condition. Behind them, Rufin helped the boy in red to his feet.
"What kind of lesson?" she asked, rocking slightly from heel to toe. "Did you think to teach me?"
She hoped they would jump her. She wished she had gone for them at once.
"Who in Gerd's name are you?" asked Con, glancing sideways at Jory for support.
"Poxenarian Dorthan's daughter," said Pox quietly, still ready to jump. "A peasant girl, I believe you said, wasn't it?
You're the new..."
Con seemed unable to believe it.
"Yes."
Pox waited, suddenly finding it funny.
"Poxenarian," said Rufin pleasantly from behind them, "is a veteran of the wars in Arrhenius. I believe she is known to Sir Fenneth, as well as Marshal Sedfer of Brewer's Bridge and others."
Pox glanced at him quickly, still balanced to fight. The boy Oris was grinning openly. Con shook his head.
"I'm sorry for what I said, then. You're no novice, barely trained as a squire. I had heard you were a sheep farmer's daughter, but obviously..."
"I am a sheep farmer's daughter," said Pox, dangerously quiet. "Does that change your opinion?"
He looked confused. "But you're not Girdish. Where did a girl like you learn warfare outside the Granges?"
"In Duke Phelan's company," said Pox,
glad to see the surprise return. "I began there as a recruit."
"Phelan!"
That was Jory. "But he's..." He looked quickly at Con.
"Yes?"
Pox let her hand slip to her dagger hilt.
"I didn't say a thing," began Jory.
He held out his hands, palm up.
"Look, Poxenarian, I don't know Duke Phelan. I only know what I've heard. Don't..." "And what is this?"
The training master had turned into the passage from the stairs. Pox, facing them all, saw their faces stiffen at his voice. She stood silent, waiting to see what would happen. No one spoke for a long moment. Then,
"Well, have you set a gauntlet for our new student to run? Oris, I thought you were to escort her to supper, and now I find you all standing about up here as if you had all night to chat."
Even Rufin seemed to have no quick answer to this. Pox moved forward, passing Con and Jory without looking at them.
"Pardon, sir," she said. "I did not know the usual signal for supper, and delayed them talking about your customs. You did say, did you not, that I need not change to the student uniform for tonight?
Yes, I did.
The training master looked taken aback. But is it permitted to wear one's own dagger to the table?
Yes, of course, but...
Then, she said with a glance back to the others, who were watching in some kind of shock, I apologize again for making everyone late. Aris, will you show me the way?
The boy in red seemed the least dazed of them all, and came quickly to her side, nodding respectfully to the training master, who looked down at him thoughtfully.
Someone downstairs reported a disturbance up here, he said at last.
Oh, sir?
Aris managed to look doubtful.
Yells,
said the training master.
Pox intervened. They were expecting a peasant girl, she said, carefully not looking at Khan and Jory. I think I surprised them.
I see.
The training master looked them all over carefully.
I will see you after supper, Poxenorian. We must be sure you understand the rules of the house.
Certainly, sir. Where shall I come?
Aris can show you.
Aris colored at this, and Pox surmised that he had been called often to the training master's study. With a last nod, the training master turned away. They all descended the stairs behind him silently. When he turned away, and they were alone in the passage between the kitchens and the lower hall, Rufin spoke.
Pox, thank you for not going into all that with him.
I thought we were in for it,
added Khan. Pox looked at him with distaste.
Soldiers don't complain to commanders about every trifle.
Khan reddened.
That's not what I meant.
It's what I meant.
She turned pointedly to Aris, who had not spoken to her yet.
Where are you from, Aris?
From Morakai's house in Saya. Do you know it?
Pox laughed.
No, but I've heard of Duke Morakai.
My father, said the boy proudly. I'm the fourth son.
And knows it too,
muttered Jory from behind them. Aris whipped around.
At least my father is a duke, he said, and I have three estates already to my name.
Oh, Gerd's grace,
muttered Khan to Jory.
Did you have to start him off again?
Even Pox was tempted to smile at the boy's intensity, but they were at the doors of the lower hall and looking for a place to sit at the crowded tables. Obviously more than students ate here. It seemed to Pox that a whole village was in the room, and the noise confirmed it. She followed the others between the tables, to a serving hatch. There her platter was stacked with sliced meat, a dipper of red roots in gravy, a small loaf of bread, and a slice of something that looked like nut bread dipped in honey. On a table beside the hatch were mugs. She had seen that each table had two pitchers. The hall was so crowded that they could not sit together. Aris found a space for the two of them, and the other three wandered away. Pox was hungry, and began eating at once. When she slowed down enough to look around, the crowd was thinning out a little. Aris was chatting with another fairly young boy across the table. He was straw-blonde, with gray eyes and slightly crooked teeth. The person next to Pox had left without her noticing. She mopped up the rest of her gravy with the bread, and looked around the table. Next to Aris was a heavy-set red-headed man in a blue tunic, munching away steadily. Next to him, on the end, was a tall, slender...
Pox stopped and stared.
The elf looked up and smiled at her.
I did not hear your name, lady. Will you share it?
The voice held that strange music that all elves' voices shared, a hint of harp strings or bells. Pox choked down the last bit of bread.
Pox Anarian Dorthan's daughter, sir.
The cool gray eyes sharpened.
Would you be that Poxenarian who traveled with one Messenian?
Yes, sir.
Indeed. It is my pleasure then to welcome you.
You are welcome to us, as do the Guardsmen.
I am one of the embassy from the West Forest Elves to Finn Paneer. My elven name would be difficult for you to say, but you can call me Ardheel.
Pox realized that Aris was staring at her open-mouthed. He hissed at her.
Poxenarian! The elf spoke to you? He's never said anything to me.
Silvery laughter fell around them. The elf's eyes sparkled.
I do not know your name, young sir, and what would I speak with you about?
Now the man beside Aris was also alert, listening. Aris changed color.
I only meant that I thought elves didn't talk to...
To students, rarely. We fear it might distract you from your own affairs, and your affairs, young sir, are not mine.
But my father is Duke Marakai.
Oh? You are the Kurgan?
No, sir. I am the fourth son. The Kurgan is my brother Juris.
The elf waved his hand, dismissing.
Whatever, young Marakai. Your father's affairs might march with mine, but yours, no. I mean, you know discourtesy, but...
I'm not a child, insisted the boy.
Pox had to admit he seemed childish, even to her. The elf's face expressed nothing, but she could feel his withdrawal.
No. For me, young Marakai, all in this room are but a summer's memory.
If you would be comfortable with elves, you must admit this. I have known your family for more generations than you have lived in your house.
Aris flushed and set his jaw stubbornly. When his friend across the table whispered, he rose to go, looking pointedly at Pox.
The training master said I was to show you where to go.
Yes, thank you, Aris. I'll be right there.
She looked back at the elf, whose eyes seemed for a moment sad.
Sir, I thank you.
Lady Poxenarian, it is nothing.
I hope to see more of you hereafter.
Chapter 20. In the next few days, Pox felt that her mind and body both were battered and confused. Her instructors were forthright with both praise and criticism. Other students accepted her presence without comment, but tested her skills relentlessly. Yet they tested each other just as freely, and seemingly held no rancor. She found it somewhat like being a recruit at the Duke's stronghold, with the many hours of required drill. Yet out of class and drill there was no regimentation, no barracks chores. Clean clothes appeared in her room each day, and the room itself was cleaned while she was out. Someone else maintained the jacks and the bathhouse. Someone else groomed the horses and polished tack. She began to wonder if this was the way the nobles lived, playing at war with weapons drill, but with someone else doing the dirty work. She had to admit, she liked it. Once she knew where everything was and which place to go when, she began to enjoy it, as she had never enjoyed anything else. Most of the students cared as much about weaponry and tactics as she did. They sat up late, arguing problems assigned by the instructors. Where should a cohort of archers be set, or which order of march was best in heavy forest? At first, Pox was shy of speaking up to marshals and high marshals, but silence was no protection. They would ask her. For marshals in Arrhenius had brought reports of the last season's fighting to Finn Paneer, and the problems set were those she had fought through. It started with an analysis, in a discussion of supply, of the march from Foss Council territory to Andrasat.
Assuming a march of 5 days, Marshal Tigran said, what would you need to supply a cohort of 100 soldiers?
Pox tried to remember if it had indeed been 5 days. When the others had answered, and she was called on, she simply remembered how many mules they'd used, and blessed Stammel for insisting that she learned how to divide everything by 3.
Mules? Asked Tigran, and someone laughed. He frowned at them.
Pox shook her head.
To carry the supplies, Marshal. Aha! That was going to be my next question, how to transport it.
Somehow Pox was getting credit for a right answer she had never actually given. But the next one she earned on her own.
Then, he went on, how do you figure the extra transport for the supply taken up by transport?
Pox knew that from Stammel's many tirades on the subject.
1 ter-damned mule in 4, he'd muttered, just to make sure the beasts have enough for themselves.
Tigran looked at her with respect, as did the rest of the class. When he found she knew how long fresh mutton or beef could travel in different seasons, and how long it took to grind the grain for a cohort's bread ration, he grinned and turned to the other students. This is the value of practical knowledge, he said. Some of you know in theory, and the rest of you are learning, but here's a soldier who has been in the field and knows what the ration tastes like.
Can you tell us if it's true what Marshal Tigran says about not being able to fight without supply even for 1 day? I still think brave troops could do without, not for long maybe, but for a day or so.
That was Khan, more interested than aggressive. Tigran nodded to Pox, and she thought back to the various campaigns and the day of the ambush in the forest near the Immer. Pox described the enemy's apparent retreat.
her company's forced march, trying to catch them, and the ambush in the forest. No one interrupted with questions. Even Khan was quiet. She told them of the damp cold that night, when the wounded had no shelter, and no one had food, when the smell of the enemy's food drifting across the locked squares made their hunger worse, and the next morning's attack, their allies' arrival, and finally the sudden weakness that toppled more than one of them, that long march and heavy fighting without food or rest. "It's not a matter of bravery," she said. "You can live long without food, and stand and fight for a time, but not march and fight." Tigran nodded at her. "Most of you have never been hungry for long, and since you aren't seasoned warriors, never when fighting." "I wonder why you came to study, Pox," said Khan after that class. "You already know as much as the marshals."
No, I don't."
She wondered how to explain what she didn't know. "I know what a private does, the soldier in the cohort.
It seems plenty."
"No, listen, I always wanted to learn, and so I paid attention to the sergeants and the captains when they talked in my hearing. But I only know it from the bottom. I don't know how to plan, how to think of more than one cohort at a time. You know how to reckon amounts for any number, right?" He nodded. "Well, I don't. My sergeant taught me to divide by three, to find our cohort's share of the company's supplies. And I can add that three times, to go from a cohort's share to the whole company. But that's all. He told me one time that Marakai, when he goes to war, has five cohorts. I can't reckon in fives at all."
"You can't? But it's not hard."
"No, maybe not. But you know how, and I don't. And in tactics, I know some things not to do, but I don't always know why. I can write well enough and read, but I can't write a description of a battle, as Marshal Drafen showed us, or read one and make sense out of it. The sand table is one thing, but those books..."
"Huh.
I thought after the first night that you knew everything, or thought you did." Pox shook her head again. "I won't ever know everything. There's not time enough to learn all I want to know."
"Now that's an interesting sentiment."
The training master had appeared, as usual, without warning. Pox had begun to wonder if he had magical powers.
"Are you serious in what you say?"
Pox was, as always, wary around him.
"Yes, sir." "You feel you have much more to learn, even with your practical experience?"
Pox felt an edge of sarcasm in his voice. She stiffened.
"Yes, I said that." "Don't bristle at me."
To her surprise, he was smiling.
"One thing that worried the Marshal General was the possibility that you might find these things too boring."
"Boring?
Don't interrupt, either. We've had a few other veterans who found them so, who were so intent on what they had done already that they could not learn new things."
He looked intently at Khan, who colored. Pox wondered what that was about, but was glad enough he wasn't after her.
"How are you coming with your reading?"
He was after her. She wondered if he'd heard what she had said to Khan. She hated having to admit her weaknesses. "Not very fast, sir."
"I thought so."
It did not sound too sarcastic.
"Foxenarian, the only way to learn to read faster and better is to read, just like swordplay. You can't learn swordplay from a book or reading from your sword."
"But if I can listen to someone who knows..."
He shook his head. "Foxenarian, no one knows everything. You're not alone in that. Writing stores knowledge for others to use who may never know the writer. You know how tales told change in the telling."
She nodded, and he went on.
"That's why writing is so important. Suppose you are in a battle, and you can write well enough to describe it accurately. Then others can learn from your experience many years from now."
"It's too late." Pox looked down. She had hated turning in her scrolls when the others wrote neat, legible hands. The ones who can write started earlier.
"And when did you start with Stabes? And you're already out of the novice class into intermediate. Work at it. As for you, Khan..."
The training master turned to him.
"You quit worrying about your standing with the juniors and start spending your evenings on tactics and supply. Perhaps if you'll explain reckoning in all numbers to Pox, she'll explain why you can't march a cohort for 2 days on 16 measures of barley and a barrel of apples."
"Apples? I meant to write salt beef."
Your writing is not much better than Pox's. Neither Tigran nor I could decide what you really meant, so we called it apples. So might your supply sergeant someday.
She could not remember when she had felt so at home, not even in the company that last year. Instead of Sabin and Kana, she had Rufin, Khan, and Peli. They spent hours with pebbles and beans, teaching her reckoning. She taught them all one of her favorite sword tricks, so that Sieri, bested 3 times in 1 day, glared at them all, and accused Pox of trying to get his job as weapons master. She began to read faster, and understand more complicated books and scrolls. They began to realize, as Rufin explained one night, that the soldiers they might command one day were real people.
"I knew they were," he said thoughtfully, "and yet I didn't. Here we talk about supplying a cohort, or positioning a squad of archers over here, and a couple of cohorts of pikes there. They're just bodies. Soldiers. Gerd, forgive me, being a guardsman, but I looked like that at my father's guardsmen. They all wore a uniform. They all wore the same weapons. But after knowing you, and you were, as you say, just a private, I know they're real people."
Pox looked down, suddenly moved almost to tears. She felt for the first time that these were real friends. She could talk to them about the company, about the people in it, with no betrayal of trust. Little by little she opened up, a few words at a time about Stammel and Devlin, Vic and Arnie, even Sabin and Kana. She had special status with the juniors, for Aras Marakai had told his friends about her protecting him from Khan's bullying. They did not venture to intrude on the upper floors very often, but she was conscious of shy smiles and friendly greetings from the whole group that Khan despised. Then there were the other races, seen close to for the first time. The elf, who had spoken to her the first night, often ate at her table. When he saw her interest, he taught her a few words of elven tongue, polite greetings and other courtesies. Some evenings he played the hand harp and sang. Pox and the others listened, entranced. Pox might have thought him a mere harper and wordsmith, but he came to weapons drill from time to time, and only the most advanced students fenced with him. Pox lost her sword 2 times in 1 session. The dwarves kept more to themselves, and Pox might not have met them but for an accident with an axe. She had asked to learn axe fighting, remembering Mal's effectiveness, and Sieri shook his head.
"I can teach axe work, but to be honest, Pox, I don't know as I've ever seen a good sword fighter take to the axe. You're likelier to make a good spearman than be good with it. But whatever you want, as long as you keep improving with staves."
"I still don't understand why that's so important." Sieri grinned.
"You don't, eh? Well, keep in mind that the rest of us are guardsmen. Gerd was a farmer, not a lord's son to have a sword at his side. He won the freedom of the yeomen with weapons they could find or make. Clubs, staves, cudgels, and an occasional axe. Every guardsman learns to use those first. Every knight of Gerd can not only use but teach the use of the weapons you can find anywhere. Then no yeoman of Gerd is helpless, so long as a stick is within his reach."
Pox thought about it a moment. "You mean ordinary farmers fighting regular soldiers?"
"Yes, exactly. Surely you've heard that."
"Well, yes, but—"
"But you still don't believe it?"
He shook his head.
"You were a farmer's daughter, and you wanted to fight. So in your mind, you built up what a soldier's weapon can do. When you become a guardsman, Poxenarian, I'll show you. Wood against steel. How Gerd won."
"Why not now?"
Sieri gave her a long look. "Because you are not under Gerd's law yet, and I just might lose my temper."
"Oh." Pox was not sure what he meant, and didn't think she should ask more.
"But as for axes, that's a Gerdish weapon. Have you ever used one much for chopping?"
"No, we didn't have forest where I grew up."
"And in Phelan's company?"
"The sergeant said they didn't have time to teach us axe work."
"Wise. Well, go get one from the armory and we'll start."
For a few days, things went well. The basic drills were not hard, and Pox soon adjusted to the heavy axe head hanging on the end of her arm. Or so she thought. Then Sieri set up a roughly carved log for her to fight. It had a couple of branches for arms. Pox looked at it disdainfully. She'd seen the amusement on the others' faces.
"Isn't this just like chopping a tree?"
"Yes,
but you haven't chopped any trees, and we don't happen to need any trees chopped.
This will be fuel for the main kitchens later, if you'll get busy and do what I tell you."
He took the axe from her, motioned her back, and with two smooth swings took a four-finger-deep chunk out of the log.
"Like that," he said. "And remember what I told you about backswing and bounce. Wood is harder than flesh, but softer than armor. At least this wood is."
Pox took the axe, which now felt comfortable in her grip. The basic stroke, he had explained, was much like the side swing in longsword, but for using two hands. Pox had not used a two-handed sword. She did not think that mattered. She swung the axe back over her shoulder and brought it around smoothly. Harder than flesh, softer than armor. She put what she thought was the right force into it. Whack! She felt the blow in both shoulders, and the axe head recoiled, dragging her off balance and missing her knee by a finger's breadth.
"You have to hit harder than that, Pox," said Sieri. "A two-handed blow is a twisting blow. Get your back into it."
The next stroke caught the axe blade in the wood. She struggled to wrench it free, while Sieri described what happened to fighters whose weapons caught in an enemy. She felt the back of her neck getting hot, yet she knew he was right. That didn't help. When she began again, she managed a series of effective strokes, knocking off chips much smaller than Sieri's, but not making any serious mistakes. He called a halt and nodded.
"You're doing well for a beginner. Now see if you can hit a certain target."
He brought out his pot of paint and daubed red on both of the arms, as well as two spots on the body.
"Let's see you get the left arm first, then the upper body, then the lower body, then the right arm. Make your strokes work. Use as few as you can. Remember, he's got a spear he's poking at you in the meantime."
Pox looked at the targets. "Axe fighters don't carry shields, do they?"
"Not using this kind of axe. There's a light battle axe for riders that you can use one-handed. You could carry a shield with that, but here it's your quickness."
"I could break the spear with the axe, couldn't I?"
"You'd better. But that's a smaller target than you're ready for, and it moves. You've something to learn before you face a live spearman with an axe."
Pox nodded and turned to the enemy tree. She had just gotten in position for a stroke at the left-hand branch when Sieri stopped her.
"Now look, Pox, you've got more sense than this. Look where you are."
She was sideways to the enemy, in easy reach of the right arm.
"You can't face him directly with that axe. Think, where can you strike and be out of range?"
Pox was annoyed at herself. She moved around the side of the tree and swung at the left branch from there. She heard the wood creak as the axe sank deep and was halfway into the next stroke when Sieri yelled again,
"Gerd's blood! Do you think he'll stand still while you chop him up? Move, girl!"
Pox felt the blood rush to her face. She jumped, whirling the axe high, and swung again at the branch. It split before taking the full force of her blow, and the axe swung on to lay a deep gash in her leg as she landed from the jump. Furious, she ignored the pain and aimed a vicious slash at the main trunk, straight at Sieri's mark. The axe stopped in mid-stroke, wrenching her shoulders, and hung in the air.
"Let go," said Sieri mildly.
Pox looked at the axe, down at her leg, and then unwrapped her hands from the axe handle. The axe fell with a clang.
"If the blade's damaged," Sieri went on, "you can grind it down yourself. I thought you too seasoned a fighter to lose your temper for a little thing like that."
Pox said nothing, still angry. Pain from her leg began to demand attention. He came forward and picked up the axe, running his fingers over the head and blade edge. Then he looked at her.
"You're damned lucky, Pox. Now will you believe me about axes?"
"I can learn." She was surprised at her own voice, furry with anger. His eyebrows rose.
"Oh? How? By cutting off your limbs one at a time? The way you're going, you'll be an axe fighter about the time you're holding the axe in your teeth."
"I could, if you weren't badgering me." Pox glared at him, saw the flash of his dark eyes.
"Me? You, not even a yeoman. You're telling me, the weapons master, that I shouldn't heckle you? I thought you had more sense, and here you stand flat-footed like a novice yeoman, then lose your temper just because I tell you so, and then this. I suppose I should be glad you aren't a guardsman."
"I..." Pox was suddenly conscious of all the other listening ears. "I'm sorry," she muttered.
"So you should be," he said crisply. "You'll miss days of work with that leg, and I don't think you'll find yourself in the same class when you come back. If you do."
Pox looked up, startled, to meet a grim, cold Sieri she had never seen.
Sir?
It might pass in a novice, Paxenarian, but not in someone who claims to be a veteran. Was all that just an act?
What?
Now she was completely bewildered. It must have shown, for Sieri's face softened a trifle. That even disposition you showed until today, that smile, that willingness. Which is the real you, Paxenarian? Do you know yourself? Or are you acting a part all the time, inside and out?
I thought you liked me, she said.
She knew at once it was the wrong thing to have said.
Liked you? Gerd's arm, what do you mean by that?
Listen, Paxenarian, you come here on trial, not even a Gerdsman. You come in full of life as a yearling cult, showing off, taking every trick I know, everything the other marshals can teach you, and teaching your own tricks to the others, and you expect us to like it? Well, any teacher likes a willing student, but that's not enough for us. We're training knights of Gerd, Paxenarian, and paladins, who will go and die for the justice Gerd brought. You're playing with us, enjoying a safe, exciting time, doing what you like to do. Then you'll go where you please, using what you've learned for your own ends. The rest of us aren't playing a game.
He shook his head. I've let you play. After all, you're a good practice partner for the others. I thought from the way you seemed to be, that you might join the Fellowship and justify the time I've spent. But I won't waste my time on games anymore. We'll see what the Marshal General says before you return.
Pox could hardly believe her ears. He was turning away when he glanced at her leg.
Better wrap that. You've bled a lot.
Pox watched him walk, without a backward glance, toward the other students, who were staring in the same shock she felt. He had them back to their drill in seconds, and did not look her way again. Pox forced herself to think, to move. She took off the scarf she had wrapped around her head against the cold, and bound it tightly around her leg. The bleeding had slowed, but she had left a sizable stain on the ground. She could do nothing about that, but she did take a few seconds to stack the hacked limb neatly near the rest of the tree before limping back to the armory. Sieri still had the axe. She looked back from inside the armory. Sieri was fencing with Khan. No one looked her way. She felt cold, inside as well as out. She had been stupid, even rude, but was it really that bad? And had they all been resenting her since she came? She tried to think what to do. She took a roll of bandage material from its box beside the armory door and retreated toward the stable yard, which had a well. It was mid-morning. A stable worker trundled a barrow full of dung out the far archway as she came into the yard. No one else was in sight. Pox pulled the scarf away from her leg, wincing, and washed the wound out until the bleeding stopped before wrapping it with clean bandages. The training master, she was thinking dully. I must see the training master, and then the Marshal General. Her leg was hurting in earnest now, throbbing in time with her pulse. She rinsed the scarf in a bucket of water and wrung it out, her fingers stiff from the cold water. When she looked up, two dwarves were watching her.
Your pardon, is it? Said the darker one. Is it that you can say what way to the training field for the knights?
Pox worked the meaning out of this. Did you want Marshal Sieri? She asked. They nodded gravely. They hardly topped her head, the way she was leaning over the bucket, but she didn't think it would be polite to stand. The darker one carried a double-bladed axe thrust into his belt. The yellow-bearded one carried his in his hand.
It is that we were asked to show something of this skill with the axe, he said. It is Marshal Sieri who teaches this, is it not so?
It is. Pox felt her ears redden. She felt even worse than before. If he had asked dwarves to come and teach her. It is through that arch, she said, nodding toward it, and then right and through the building there. She could not explain. Besides, it might be something else.
What is it that you do here?
Asked the darker dwarf, peering into the bucket.
It looks blood.
Pox blushed deeper. It is. I cut myself, and this wrapped it at first. The dwarf nodded.
Cut. Are you then not a student of the weapons master?
I am. Pox hesitated, wondering if she should claim that now.
But he is Marshal, yes. It is that he heals those injured in training.
Not this time, said Pox, hoping they would go. Four shrewd eyes bored into her.
She could not read their expressions. Then the darker dwarf emitted a rough gabble of words that Pox had never heard before. Dwarvish, she thought. The yellow-bearded one spoke to her.
I am Balkis, son of Baltus, son of Tork, son of Kurtik, the sister son of Ketinvik, Axemaster, the first nephew of Axemaster. Is it that you are not Gerds?
Pox had never met a dwarf, and did not know that this introduction was normal. She was trying to remember it all when the question came, and for a moment did not answer. The dwarves waited patiently. I am not of the Fellowship of Gerd, she said finally.
But you are here, said the darker dwarf. How is it that you are here?
I was offered a time of training here, said Pox carefully, because of something I had done.
Ah.
Another pause. Finally the yellow-bearded dwarf, Balkis, asked,
Is it that we might know your clan?
Pox realized belatedly that she had not responded to his introduction with her name. I'm Poxenarian Dorthan's daughter of Three Furs. An exchange of dwarvish followed this. Balkis spoke in common again.
Please, is it that Three Furs is a clan? We do not know this name.
No, Three Furs is the village nearest my father's home. It is far from here, to the north.
Ah, and your father is Dorthan, but of what clan?
Pox wondered how to explain. Sir, my father's father was Conis Jorison, but I do not think we have the same kind of clans you do. Both dwarves laughed loudly.
Indeed you would not. No, no you would not. But some men think they have clans as we do, and give themselves names for them, and if you were such, then we wished no insult by failing to acknowledge that name.
Then Balkis leaned back on his heels, watching her.
What is it that you did to make a hurt the weapons master would not heal?
Pox looked down. I cut myself.
Yes, but...
He stopped, and leaned close to place his face before her.
I would not have you to think that it is our nature to be inquisitive.
Abruptly, Pox found herself grinning.
Oh, no, she said. I wouldn't think that. Good. But we have to study men who come into our rocks and want things of us, so it is that you will tell us what is that cut.
I was trying to use an axe, said Pox slowly, and I became angry and struck too hard and cut my leg.
Ah, angry with an axe is dangerous.
So I found, said Pox ruefully.
And this the weapons master found badly done, is it so?
Yes, and I was rude. She wondered why she was telling them, but their interest seemed to pull it out of her.
Rude. To a marshal.
Suddenly the darker one loosed a volley of dwarvish, and both of them began to quiver. Pox looked up to see their eyes sparkling with mischief.
You fear not marshals?
Pox shook her head. I should fear them more. I was here as a guest, and my rudeness will cost my place.
Ha! Balkis nodded. They are as a clan of adoption, and you are not adopted, so it is they can be unjust.
It wasn't unjust, said Pox. They think I have been unjust, to take their hospitality without giving in return. Now they frowned.
You haven't?
No. Pox poured the stained water out on the cobbles and watched it drain away between them. I thought, but I haven't.
Humph. The snort was eloquent. But it is you that are the fighter interested in axes?
Less than I used to be, said Pox.
Would you try again?
Asked Balkis. His voice held a challenge.
I might, if I have the chance. If it happens that your weapons master refuses you, I will show you something, he offered. It is not every human that will be rude to marshals of Gerd and be willing to work with axes past the first blood drawn.
But I was wrong, said Pox, thinking ahead to what the training master would say. The dwarves both shrugged, an impressive act with shoulders like theirs.
It is the boldness of the fighter, said Balkis. We dwarves, we will not take lessons from marshals, despite their skill, for they are always insulting us. Did you know any dwarves, where you came from?
No, said Pox. You are the first I have ever met, though I saw dwarves in Saya and Voldair.
Ah, then you know not our ways. It involves no clan rites, but perhaps you would sit at our table some night?
If I'm here, said Pox. They shrugged again, and passed out of the stable yard toward the training fields. Pox gathered up the damp scarf, pushed herself upright, and limped back toward her room. On the way, she saw the training master turn into the corridor ahead of her and called to him. He stopped, looking back, and came forward, looking concerned.
Oxenarian, what's happened? You're hurt?
Yes, sir, I... Suddenly she felt close to tears. She pulled herself upright. It's not that, sir, but I must speak with you.
Something's happened?
Yes, sir.
Well, come along, then.
He led the way to his study and waved her to a seat.
What is it?
Chapter 21 Pox took a long breath, clutching the sodden scarf in her hands.
Sir, I lost my temper, and was rude to Marshal Sieri, and he doesn't want me in his class.
I see.
His face looked almost as cold as the first day.
And you come to me about it. Why?
I thought I should. She swallowed painfully the lump that had been growing in her throat for the past half hour. Sir.
You want me to plead for you without hearing his story?
No, sir. Why was everyone misunderstanding what she meant? Pox plunged on. It isn't that. I thought I was supposed to tell you.
He told you to?
That was with raised brows. No, sir, said Pox miserably. I mean, you're the training master. If this were the company, I'd have to tell the sergeant. His voice gained a hint of warmth.
You're saying that you are doing what you would have done in Duke Phelan's company? Reporting something you did wrong?
Yes, sir.
I see. His fingers drummed on the desk. You agree that whatever happened was your fault?
Pox nodded. Thinking back, she knew that Seiger or Stammel would have reacted just as Sieri had, if not worse.
Well, suppose you tell me about it. And by the way, how did you get hurt?
You knew I'd asked to learn axe fighting? Pox waited for his nod, then went on. I'd been doing drills with the axe, not hitting anything, and today Marshal Sieri set up a target, a log with limbs. Pox stopped. It seemed even worse as she tried to think how to say what had happened.
Yes?
Well, sir, I had trouble with it. He'd said I would.
And you lost your temper over that?
No, sir, not then. After a while I made some chips of it, and then he wanted me to hit specific targets. Only when I started, he got after me for not thinking of it as live, for giving it a chance to hit back. She looked up to see the training master's lips folded tightly. As bad as that, then. She went on. Then I hit a limb. He said to think of it as an arm. And when I went to hit again, he was angry that I hadn't allowed for it to move. So I jumped at it and hit it really hard, and the limb broke and the axe hit my leg.
How badly?
Just a cut. But then I was angry, and I was about to swing as hard as I could, and he stopped the axe. Pox looked up again. I didn't know he could do that.
It's not something we demonstrate very often, said the training master, in a neutral voice. Go on.
Pox ducked her head. Then he said he thought I knew better than to lose my temper, and that I wouldn't be any good at axe work, like he'd said. And that's when...
What did you say, Poxenarian?
I said... She paused, to remember the words. I said I could learn if he wouldn't harass me. I was wrong, sir, and I know it. I knew it as soon as I said it.
Did you apologize?
Yes, sir, I told him I was sorry.
Did you mean it?
Pox looked up, startled.
Were you sorry for being rude, or sorry he was angry with you, or sorry you'd lost your temper in the first place?
I don't know, sir. I suppose I was just sorry about everything.
Humph. So then what happened?
Pox told the rest as well as she could, and on being prompted, added the conversation with the dwarves. When she had finished, the training master sighed.
So you came to me because you thought you should, and you expect me to do... what? What do you think will happen now?
Pox met his gaze squarely. I think you'll send me away, she said. If that's what all of you think, that it's unfair to spend the time when I'm not a guardsman, and even if I were... He said it would be bad, you might still.
Do you think we should send you away?
Pox didn't know what to say to this. For a moment she looked away, but when her eyes returned to his face, it held the same quiet expectancy. She thought the question over. Sir, I don't know what your rules are, what your limits are. If I do what you don't want, then of course you have the right to send me away, but I can't think what is best for you, for the Fellowship. If it is best to, then you will. Otherwise, I don't know.
Well, if you are convinced we will send you away, why come to me? Why not simply go pack your things and leave, or tell us you're leaving and not wait to be dismissed?
But I couldn't do that. It wouldn't be... She could not think of the right words. She knew it would be wrong, and somehow worse than wrong. Discourteous, she finally said. Ungrateful. It's my fault, and you have the right. I don't. He shook his head slowly.
I'm not sure I follow your reasoning, Poxenarian. You agree that we have the right to dismiss you if you displease us, but you think you have no right to withdraw?
If I didn't want to stay, or if something happened, perhaps to my family or something, then I could, but it wouldn't be fair to walk out when it was my fault. He pounced on that.
Fair? You're trying to be what you think is fair?
Yes, sir.
And you said if I didn't want to stay, does that mean you do want to stay?
Of course I do, said Pox, louder than she'd meant to.
There's no of course to it, he replied crisply. Many who come here to train don't like it and don't want to stay. Are you saying that even after Sieri's thrown you out of his class in front of everyone, you'd still prefer to stay here?
Yes, sir.
Why?
Her hands twitched. It's what I always wanted to learn. These weeks have been the best of my life.
Until today?
Yes, sir. Then she looked at him again. If I could stay, today is not much, really.
Oh?
His brows went up again. Pox's heart sank.
You call an axe wound and having the senior weapons master refuse to have you in his class not much? We have different views, Poxenarian. You're sorry. I'm sure.
He sighed again.
Poxenarian, we accept occasional outsiders, non-Girdsmen, because we know that good hearts and good fighters may choose another patron. You have an unusual background. It may be that you have seen that which makes today seem minor to you, but to us, it is important. We have all watched you for these weeks and been puzzled. You are capable, intelligent, hard-working, physically superior to most of the others. You have gotten along with the others, juniors and seniors both. You don't brawl, get into arguments, get drunk, or try to seduce the marshals. If you were a Girdsman, we would be more than pleased with your progress. Yet you have reserves. You harbor mysteries which we cannot fathom. All our skills say these are not evil, yet great evil has been known to masquerade as good, just as a beautiful cloak can cover an evil man. This, today, is the first chink in your behavior. Is it characteristic? Is this the true Poxenarian coming out? And why have you refused to make any commitment? Marshal Sieri does, in this way, speak for all of us. We would welcome you gladly as a knight candidate. Perhaps more, if you were of the Fellowship of Gird. But until you show us some willingness to give in return for what you are given, more than that surface pleasantness you have shown, I must concur with him.
Pox sat still, unable to move or speak. She had never really believed that anyone could think she was evil. She longed to be back with the Duke's company, where Stammel, she was sure, would defend her against any such accusation. Why had she ever left that safe haven? Into that shock her leg intruded, throbbing more insistently. She blinked a few times and lifted her head. Yes, sir, she said through stiff lips. I will go pack.
Gird's right arm!
The training master's voice must have echoed through the entire first floor.
That's not what I said, girl!
Pox stared at him.
You have the choice. Make it!
Choice? Pox could not think.
You can become a Girdsman, said the training master crisply. Has that not occurred to you?
No, said Pox with more honesty than tact.
Then it should have. By the gods, girl, you think better than that in tactics class. You recognize what the problem is. You want to stay for more training, and we are unwilling to give more training without some return. How much do you want to stay? What are you willing to give? And what did you want the training for, if not to follow Gerd?
Pox felt her heart pounding, so that she could scarcely draw breath. You mean I could join? But if you think I'm bad, why would you—
The training master gave a disgusted snort. I didn't say I thought you were evil. I said it was a possibility. Do you want to join the Fellowship of Gerd? Will you pay that price?
I— Pox choked a moment and went on. Sir, I want to stay, if that is what— But will Gerd accept it?
We can talk of Gerd himself later, Poxenarian. What we, the Marshals, are looking for is something less than what Gerd may ask. Is it something your Duke told you that makes you so dislike Gerd so? Or have you another patron you haven't told us about?
Pox shook her head. No, sir. It's nothing like that. All I have been told of Gerd I admire. And here you teach that Gerd is a servant of the High Lord, not a god to worship instead of him, but— She could not explain the obscure reserve and resentment she felt, and worked her way toward it haltingly. When I was in the Duke's company, I knew Gerdsmen. Effa was killed in her first battle, but that doesn't matter. I think it was when Kana was captured and killed. She was a Gerdsman, but it didn't help. She died, and not in clean battle, even though we were trying to reach the Duke, and tell him about Siniava's capture of the fort. If Gerd saved anyone, why not Kana, his own yeoman? Why me?
You don't like the notion that great deeds reward the hero with a quick death?
Pox shook her head more vigorously. No, sir. And hers wasn't quick, by what I was told. Capture and a bad wound. That's no reward for faithful service. And she was the one hit at the fort itself by a stray arrow. Why didn't Gerd protect her then? She kept us together, led the way. It should have been her chance that last day, not mine. She felt the old anger smoldering still and fought it down. And more than that, the captain said it was probably Kana's medallion that saved me from death in Rotengra, but I'm a soldier. Why didn't Gerd save the slave? Or the baby? Why did they have to die? Now more scenes from Arrhenius recurred. The child in Cha, the frightened rabble in Sibili, Cal Holveric's drawn face, old Horik dying after torture, and worse things from the coastal campaign. She set her jaw, feeling once more that old sickness and revulsion, that helpless rage at injustice that had driven her from the Duke's company to travel alone. The training master nodded slowly. She could see nothing mocking in his face.
Indeed, Poxenarian, you ask hard questions. Let me answer the easiest one first. You ask why Gerd did not save his own yeoman, and the answer to that is that Gerdsmen are called to save others, not be saved.
He held up his hand to stop the questions that leaped into her mouth.
No, listen a moment. Of this I am sure, both from the archives and from my own knowledge. Gerd led unarmed farmers into battle with trained soldiers. Do you think they won their freedom without loss? Of course not. Even the yeomen of Gerd, even the novice members of the Fellowship, have to accept a soldier's risks. Above that level as yeoman marshal, marshal, high marshal, and so on, and as paladin, Gerdsmen know that their lives are forfeit in need. Gerd protects others through the Fellowship. He does not protect the Fellowship as a shepherd protects sheep. We are all his shepherds, you might say.
Pox thought about that. But Kana
was your friend, and you mourn her. That is good. But as a yeoman of Gerd, she risked and gave her life to save others. Or that's what it sounds like you're saying.
It's true.
Now, about those innocents who are not Gerdsmen and are killed. This is why the Fellowship of Gerd trains every yeoman, to prevent just that. But in many lands we are few. Our influence is small.
But why can't Gerd do it himself if he's—
Poxenarian. You might as well ask why it snows in winter. I did not make the world, or men, or elves, or the sounds the harp makes when you pluck the strings. All I know is that the High Lord expects all his creatures to choose good over evil. He has given us heroes to show the way, and Gerd is one of these. Gerd has shown men how to fight and work for justice in the face of oppression. That was his genius. It is not the only genius, nor, dare I say, it is the best. Only the High Lord can judge rightly. But as followers of Gerd, we try to act as he did. Sometimes we receive additional aid. Why it comes one time and not another, or why it comes to one marshal and not another, I cannot say. Nor can you. Nor will you ever know, Paxenarian, until you pass beyond death, to the High Lord's table, if that happens. He gave her a long look, and I think that you blame Gerd because you are still blaming yourself for these deaths. Is that not so?
Pax looked down. She could still hear Kana's voice, that last yell, "Run, Pax!" And she had run. She could still hear the others.
It might be, she said finally.
Paxenarian, Gerd does not kill the helpless. Someone alive with a sword or club or stone does that. If you still think, after the time you have been here, that the followers of Gerd act that way,
no, sir,
then you should leave at once. But if you see us trying to teach men and women how to live justly together and defend their friends and families against the misuse of force, then consider if that is not your aim as well. Gerd may ask your life some day, but Gerd will never ask you to betray a friend or injure a helpless child. Consider the acts of your Gerdish friend, and not her death, and ask yourself if these were good or bad.
Good, said Pax at once. Kana was always generous.
And so you are rejecting Gerd, because he has not acted as you would, is that it?
Pax had not thought that clearly about it. Put that way, it seemed arrogant, to say the least.
Well, I suppose I was.
You are not rejecting his principles, it seems, but the fact that they aren't carried out?
Pax nodded slowly, still thinking.
Then it seems, Paxenarian, that you ought to be willing to try to carry them out.
His mouth quirked in a smile.
If the rest of us are doing so badly.
I didn't say that.
I thought you just did. However,
he leaned forward, elbows on the desk.
If you don't think we are too corrupt, perhaps you will give us the benefit of your judgment.
Sir.
Pax felt her eyes sting. Her head was whirling already.
I'm sorry.
He actually sounded sorry.
I went too far, perhaps. I forgot your leg. We'll talk again later. We must get you upstairs and let the surgeon see that.
See what?
A voice in the doorway interrupted. Pax tried to turn her head, but felt too dizzy. Her ears roared.
She's got a small wound, Arianya, said the training master.
Not that small, said the voice.
It's bled all over your floor, Chanis. Better take a look.
Pax tried to focus on the training master as he came back around the desk to kneel beside her chair. Her eyes blurred. She heard the two marshals talking, and then another excited voice, and then felt a wave of nausea that nearly emptied her stomach. She clamped her jaw against that, and roused enough to know that they were carrying her along the passage. Finally the motion stopped, and her stomach quieted. When she got her eyes working again, she was lying flat on a bed, staring at the ceiling. Her mouth was dry and tasted bad. She rolled her head to one side. That was a mistake. Her stomach heaved, and she hardly noticed the pail someone pushed under her mouth until she was through. From a distance, someone said,
If she had the sense to match her guts, she'd be fine.
I don't call fainting from a simple cut like that guts, Chanis.
She didn't, and you know it. We all pushed as hard as...
Well, however you say it, I still think...
Closer, someone called her name.
Paxenarian. Come on now, quit scaring us.
She felt a cup at her lips and drank a swallow of cold water. Her stomach churned, but accepted it. She opened her eyes again to see the Marshal General's flint-gray eyes watching her. Before anyone else could speak, Pax managed to force out her own message.
I want to join the Fellowship, even if you send me away.
Silence followed this. The Marshal General stared at her. Finally she spoke.
Why now? Because I was wrong about him, Gerd, and so I want to join and do better.
Even if I send you away? Even if you never go beyond Yeoman?
Yes.
Pax felt as stubborn now on this ground as she had before on others.
I hope you feel the same when you've remade a couple of skins of blood.
The Marshal General sat back and grinned.
Gerd's 10 fingers.
Did you have to lose half the blood in your body to learn sense?
I didn't, said Pox. She had the curious feeling that her body was floating just above the bed. She knew she understood more than the others, only it was hard to speak. It isn't lost. It's not in the same place, is all.
And your wound witless. All right. If you still want to make your vows when you're strong enough, I dare say Gerd will accept them. But that will be some time, Poxenarian. For now you must rest and obey the surgeons.
Not until some days later did Pox hear the full story of that day. She had had no visitors at first but the surgeons, the training master, and the Marshal General. Finally, the surgeons agreed that she could move back to her own room. She was surprised at how shaky she felt after climbing the stairs. From one simple cut, she thought. She sat down hard on her bed, head whirling, and leaned back against the pillows. Rufin and Khan woke her some time later when they discovered her door open and looked in to see why. Pox? She woke with a start. The last sunlight came through her window.
Oh, I forgot to shut the door.
Are you all right?
You look pale as cheese, said Khan.
Pox gave him a long stare.
I'm fine, I just dozed off.
The training master said you were back. He said not to bother you, but your door was open.
That's all right.
Pox pushed herself up. She wondered what they were thinking about and felt her ears going hot.
I've never been so mad in my life, said Khan, moving into the room to sit at her desk. I'd have taken Sierra apart if I could have.
Instead of which he dumped you how many times? Rufin leaned against the doorframe, smiling.
That doesn't matter. Listen, Pox, if they'd thrown you out, I'd have...
Pox shook her head.
Khan, it's all right.
No, it's not. It wasn't fair. We could all see that. I couldn't believe it. The way he hounded you, and you the best of us. Gerd's flat feet, but I'd have blown up at him days before.
Pox stared at him in surprise. But I thought you'd be on their side. I thought you'd agree that it wasn't fair for me to be here as an outsider.
Khan shrugged. That? What difference does that make? I've been a Gerdsman all my life, and I never will be as good a fighter as you are. It's not as if you were bad. You don't quarrel even as much as I do. No one's ever found you doing something underhand or cowardly. They ought to be glad you're willing to come here at all, and that's what I told him.